When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Listen up, dear listeners in the UK. There's a brand new guitar show this year, the Brighton Guitar Show. It's a one-day show happening on the 15th of July at the Brighton Racecourse, and it's going to be great. We'll be there along with loads of your favourite boutique and major brands like Two Notes Audio Engineering, Chapman Guitars, Fidelity Guitars, Thought BFX, Pedal Patch, Bright Onion Pedals, Ranger FX, NRG FX, Great Eastern FX, Iverson Guitars, Kurt Mangan Strings, Mayberry, Leighton, Lemon Audio, Xander Circuitry, and loads more. What more excuse do you need to come to sunny Brighton, the birthplace of guitar nerds, than a guitar show full of guitars, pedals, effects, and accessories? Come say hi, hang out, have a beer, and check out all the cool gear with Matt, JD, and I. You might even see a few of the OG guitar nerds hosts knocking about. For tickets, visit brightonguitarshow.co.uk or check them out on social media with Brighton Guitar Show. See you there. Here at Guitar Nerds, we're big fans of iZotope software and their impressive range of plugins. And you, dear listener, get 10% off all iZotope plugins at iZotope.com with discount code NERDS10. Every Guitar Nerds podcast for well over five of its 10 years has been edited, polished, and repaired using iZotope's wonderful range of tools. From their Nectar suite to EQ, compress, and lightly add reverb to give the impression that Matt and I are in the same room, to the RX repair suite to deal with pops, clicks, and background noise. In fact, every sound sample that you hear on our podcast is mastered using iZotope's Ozone Mastering Suite, and I can even compare audio, EQ, and levels to other similar released material using iZotope's Tonal Recall. It's all very good, and believe it or not, there are a bunch of free plugins that you can try. A vinyl simulator for added character, the Ozone Imager for help visualizing your stereo mix, and a vocal doubler for added richness and depth to your vocals. Pretty neat. Check it all out at iZotope.com. Naomi and JD, I went to my doctor's today, and I told him I was having problems with my hearing, and he asked, can you describe the symptoms? And I replied, sure, they're yellow, Homer's fat, and Marge has blue hair.
I hate that.
You hate that?
Oh, no.
How can you hate that? That was one of the best ones, Naomi. This is your first podcast of the year, Naomi. So you, honestly, I think the bar is quite low. I have had some pretty terrible ones. I was trying to do music ones, and then I worked out that pretty much all music dad jokes are bad. Yeah. So they're
as bad as, like, how many drummers does it take to do this, or how many, you know?
Yeah, there aren't.
That's the beauty of the dad joke. It toes the line between dad joke and bad joke.
Well, that's it. So a good dad joke is, you know,
bad dad. Bad dad. It's my favorite tuning.
So, well, I did say that.
These are we've kind of just continued with dad jokes. This is very meta. Small, yeah,
yeah. No, that's, well, I did mean to. These aren't they're dad gad jokes. I need to make that's clear. So, dear listener, if you want to give me a dad gad joke, you can. You can DM us, or you can info@guitarnerds.net. I don't know why I went for a .net and not a .com. Well, it wasn't me. It was Mark Peckham. I'll try and get the .com at some
very dad move, I'd say.
Yeah. Yeah, it's .net
is such a Packham, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very Packham, isn't it? You know why it would have been? It would, because it was probably £15 a year, and it was like £100 a year for the .com, and he wanted to save money. But yeah. But anyway, hello, dear listener. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by JD Short.
Hiya.
And for the first time this year, Naomi McLeod.
Hello, hello, hello.
Yeah, and also, do you know what? I think actually, possibly, potentially, this might be wrong, there have been 16 episodes, and I'm pretty sure we've only had ever two people on an episode this year. So this is our first time having three people on an episode. So,
It is the magic number.
It is the magic number. So yes, welcome back, dear listener. The dad jokes have actually been spilling onto the Facebook recently. There was a whole thread started by Thomas Adelgren. I think that's how you say your name, Thomas.
That's how we say it.
That's how I'm saying it. And it was great. He was saying he tried to find three or four compressors to compare, but it was hopeless. The market is all Wong right now because there's the new Corey Wong compressor that's out. That's very good. Jeffrey Wax replied with a picture of the Empress compressor saying, "This one I have might impress you."
It's a very good compressor.
I've got it.
I'm trying to audibly shake my head here.
yeah.
Dan Pilver had replied to that saying, "Really feeling the squeeze, huh?" I mean, these dad jokes are getting out of hand, people.
Yeah,
what can I say? That don't compress me much.
Thanks for joining us, dear listener, and we'll be back next week.
Yeah.
but yes. Anyway, moving on. It's lovely to have you both on the podcast. Inevitably, dear listener, we're going to be talking a little bit probably about bass stuff this episode, but it's still a general episode. This isn't a bass special or anything. We're going to be talking about lots of things. We've got a wonderful topic of the week from Rob Nordvik. He actually sent me like five different topics, and they're all such massive concepts to talk about that some of them require whole episodes. And I am going to try and do some of them later, you know, maybe the next episode or the episode after that, try and deal with a couple of those because they were so good. But we are going to talk about one of his this week. Of course, we've got Naomi back on the podcast. She is now in a super mega massive famous super band, so we want to talk all about that and all about the gear that she's using on, you know, huge stages and stuff like that. So that's gonna be really cool. There's not much news this year. This week, Origin FX have released some new stuff. We've never got round to talking about Squire releasing their Sonic series, the new Affinity, and whether or not that's a rebadge or whether it is like a cool new exciting game changer. JD's got to spend some time with all of those KMA pedals that we've been talking about on the episodes that JD's been on over the last few weeks. So that'll be cool. And I have become obsessed with Gaia Tone effects, and I'm starting to buy up some of those. So we're going to be talking about all of those things on this week's episode. First of all, before we get into stuff, in July 15th, the Brighton Guitar Show is happening. Dear listener, and Guitar Nerds are going to be involved in that. I'm hosting a Q&A with Thorpe FX, with Adrian Thorpe from Thorpe FX. There's probably going to be some other Q&A things as well with some other brands. That's going to be great. But if you do fancy coming to that, dear listener, then brightonguitarshow.co.uk. Get your tickets and check out all the things that are happening there. It's a one-day event down at the racecourse in Brighton on a Saturday, so you get to come down to sunny Brighton for a day of guitars and cool stuff like that. So do check that out. Let's do a podcast. Naomi,
Joe and JD.
My voice has changed since playing slightly heavier music.
Well, okay. So let's obviously, that's what I'm most excited to talk about. Let's talk about that. So you are now the bass player in Empire State Bastards. Is it Bastard or Bastards?
Just one Bastard.
Just one Bastard. Empire State Bastard. Yeah. You are now the bass player in Empire State Bastard, which features an entourage of super famous people. Simon Neil from Biffy Clyro, who occasionally, every now and again, I'll always say Sam Neil, who is, of course, the star in Jurassic Park. But they are different people, quite different. And
you've checked.
Have you ever seen them in the same room?
That is a good point. I have not. That is an excellent point. Well made. What's the Slayer drummer's name? I always forget.
Dave Lombardo.
Dave Lombardo.
One of my favorite drummers.
I had to write it down. It is, of course, the incomparable Dave Lombardo on drums. And the magnificent Mike Van Aert. Mike Van Aert? Van Aert. Yes.
Mike Van Aert.
I think Mike emphasizes the Ven rather than the
Does
art.
He? Yes. I've always said Van Aert.
Diagrams, lad. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So that's absolutely incredible that you're in that. And you've got to play some absolutely awesome super mega shows as well.
I'm just on live duties. I should clarify. Mike actually played bass on the on the album itself.
Right.
Wonderful bassist. No surprises there. But yes, I've picked up live duties to bring their frankly petrifying music to the masses. Mm-hmm. We had a quick little run in the UK, three shows, three very intimate shows to kick things off. That was back at the end of March. And then we've quite a busy summer ahead with some festivals. And what lays beyond that, I do not know just yet, but it's all very exciting, super exciting for the guys. For Mike and Simon, the project was many years, I think, in the workings.
Yes.
So I feel very lucky to have gotten to board the train almost at full speed, as it were.
What an amazing thing to get to be a part of. Now, did you have to, because of course we're friends with Mike's partner Jess, both
yes.
you and I and Naomi, and mm-hmm. And so therefore sort of friends with Mike, and so did he just like ask you to join, or were you made to audition?
Actually, both of those things happened.
Oh, really?
So I had met Mike, I think twice. I'd met Mike and Jess because, of course, a little bit like crossing paths with your good self, Joe, just had sort of friends in common. And I think it might have been a gig down in Sheffield that I first met, that I first got to meet Mike and Jess. And so, yeah, there hadn't been a massive big friendship. There was just sort of meeting via pals and being like, oh, you do cool music, you do cool music, that sort of thing. So it was a little bit out of the blue. Mike reached out and basically said he had this thing lined up. And I'll be honest, it sounded so wild. A part of me was like waiting for the punchline. I was like, that's not real. To cut a long story a little shorter, he sort of asked me to audition. This was early last year, early 22, asked me to audition. I had to play two tracks that himself and Simon sent me, which I really need to like set the scene here, because it was in the living room of my flat with, you know, no, beyond fairy lights, there's just nothing to sort of visually suggest sort of mathy grindcore, do you know what I mean?
And, right.
and what they needed to see, which completely fair, was a video, you know, like not just an audio recording where I could have comped and I could have edited, you know. It's good and thorough if you've not got the chance to sort of meet someone IRL and have them play in front of you to request a video. But yeah, I had quite the comedy sort of trying to give them the full performance element, which is what they asked for, in the absolutely calm and serene lighting of my own living room. through headphones as well, because obviously it was so vicious sounding. I didn't want to go full volume. So that was quite a fun little jaunt. And then, yeah, to fast forward a few months, Mike gave me the call. I'd finished work. I was sat in the car park, super tired, one like, you know, rainy Thursday or something in October. And Mike was like, well, just can't let you know you got the gig. And I think I hung up from the call. It was quite brief, and I said the F word really loudly in my car over and over and over. I went from cool as a cucumber to having just a little brief flash of like, oh my God, this is really cool. This is real cool. Nice. And then I had to go back to being cool as a cucumber, and that's how I've remained since. But for a few flashes of realizing the kind of magnitude of who I'm getting to play with and what I'm getting to play and the joy of being a session musician, which is doing justice to other people's art. So the whole thing has just been a true honor. If nothing more happened with it, it would have been up till now just the greatest and most joyous honor to get to play with those guys.
That is very, very cool. Dear listener, I realise that, of course, you, dear listener, also know Jess, because Mike Venart's partner, Jess, because she does all the artwork for Guitar Nerds. She draws all the pictures of all of us and made the logo and all of that stuff.
Yeah, awesome illustrator. In fact, when I first met Jess, Joe, in person, I had a funny little moment of saying, it's really nice to meet you. We've not met before, but you've drawn me. It was nice to be able to be like, it's nice to meet you. Thanks for getting my septum piercing correct in the drawing. That was cool.
Yeah, she's great. Mm-hmm. But you've had to have quite a dramatic change in equipment for this, because of course the gear, because you know you played a lot of of course you have long normal scale basses, but you played a lot of short scale basses, several Broncos, things like that, amplifiers, I guess, and rigs, because you do a lot of session work. They have to be the sort of things that work in any given situation. And an awful lot of session work is going to be poppier, more indie style stuff. So mm-hmm. like lots of cleans, lots of, lots of depth and texture to sound. And you've gone from needing that from a bass and an amplifier and a pedal board to, how do you describe the genre of Empire State Bastard?
It's somewhere between
R&B,
between grindcore meets metal meets meets chaotic noise. Yes,
it's that, dear listener. So what you need is a bass rig that puts out an awful lot of volume, an awful lot of gain, and then a pedal board that can, you know, can accentuate that in a lot of different ways. And a bass guitar that can handle low tunings and be very lively and aggressive sounding. So it's kind of quite a different rig from what you normally have. So I presume you had to replace everything, or you had to seek out a completely new setup.
Pretty much everything, yeah. Now I think I must have spoken on the podcast before now about my sort of trusty 2P basses that have lurked in the background the whole time I've been banging on about Broncos historically.
Right.
So I sort of practiced and geared up and sort of learned the album on both my Classic Vibe Squire P and my Deluxe Active PJ.
Right. The Deluxe Active, that's the
seafoam.
Seafoam green one, yeah. with the PJ and the maple neck, yeah. With is it, black blocks, is it?
Yes, correct. It's Surf Pearl, I'm remembering.
Surf Pearl, yeah. That's it. Yeah.
So I sort of prepped on those two basses into the stomp, into Ableton, really running the track. I did all my prep very, very sort of just solo practice mode. But then, to bring everything to life required definitely a change, but also a little bit of a funny boomerang, because obviously my background has been so sort of heavy inspired and play the biggest cab you can find, you know, like what's the loudest amp we can use? I don't know, maybe that one, you know, pointing randomly at amps that look cool and seeing what sticks. I mean, that was my sort of upbringing musically. But Yeah, so having sold a lot of that to move into Session World, I've now had to sort of very happily point that finger at newer, better, and heavier versions of the same genre of gear. So the huge prize amidst all of this has been getting a new bass, of course. I'm now rocking a Charvel Sandemas 4, Sandemas P, in lime green metallic. I know we've talked about it on the pod before.
Have we talked about that bass?
I mean, yeah, we did. I think when it came out.
Well,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. When they dropped, I'm pretty sure we had quite a fruity argument about that color, actually. yeah, so wow, just what a bass. What a bass. I had tried them unplugged in some stores when I'd sort of seen them after we had talked about them on the pod. Hadn't plugged one in, and so I took a little bit of a punt. I thought, looking at the specs, I thought, right, nice slim neck. Unfinished neck as well.
Baked
suits me great.
As well, isn't it?
Yes, baked and baked. Active-passive push-pull pot and PJ pickups and just cool, weird looks. It all just fit me super well on paper, and my God.
A reverse P as well, isn't it?
Yes, it is a reverse P. Yeah. Which I'm already.
What EQ is it? Do you get 3-band or 2-band?
3-band.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So it is. It does everything. It's one of those active instruments that does everything. Weirdly, there's like no competition for that on the market at the moment. I'm sure when I worked at GAC, like every other bass was active and had like 3 bands of EQ, and PJ was super common. Mm-hmm. And there's just not a lot of it. Certainly if you want a classic look, if you know, it's classic, it's lime green, but it's I'm gonna have to beep that. but it's still a precision based body, but yeah, there's nothing that looks retro. There's not a lot that looks retro out there that's doing that, that's mm-hmm. giving you those sort of active PJ things. So I'm not sure you had an awful lot of choice in getting something like that.
Yeah, for sure. What I was not prepared for, though, was just how characterful it sounds. Right. It sounds wild. It is the liveliest sounding bass I've ever played, let alone owned. I pretty much have been running it in passive because active sounds awesome, and definitely with the rest of the rig sounds absolutely freaking huge, but at times a bit too lively. It's just wild. Was not prepared for that. Obviously, I'll be trying out different strings. I'll be trying out different picks, you know, as I go, as I get to know the bass a bit better. But the most aggressive bass.
And they're really affordable, right? They're like, 800 quid or something like that. I mean, sorry, dear listener, it's not really affordable. I appreciate it. But it's affordable for a bass that does all of those things. It's not over $1,000 is what I'm saying.
Completely. Yeah, completely. And anyone who's sort of heard me on the pod before knows I'm quite the budget queen. I really, really enjoy getting the best out of instruments in the sort of sub 800, sub 1000 category, because I think there are just so many gems at that sort of general price point. So it's just been fantastic. I've been so grateful to get to own it and to play it, and it has set the tone for the rest of the rig for sure. Getting to have a load of fun with a bunch of new pedals. I'm getting to finally play an Orange AD200B.
Well, let's talk about that, shall we? The amplifier choice. So you've gone for the AD200, which, dear listener, is the massive all-valve, proper, looks like an Orange amp, Orange bass amplifier that they've done for years. The AD200 must have been in production for at least 20 years now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if it's exact, its exact birth year, but it is an amp that I have just seen on stage so many times over the years coming up, and always my ears have perked up to it. How it handles both clean and aggro tones, just the beauty of its gain. So it just sounds effortlessly full and serious and solid in a way that many other brilliant amps in their own ways just don't quite cut. And then also for the job at hand, I think to myself and Mike, when we spoke about what gear to sort of put in for me for the gig. It just made sense. It was really the only one that made sense. And then also there's so much interplay because of sort of Simon and Mike and Simon's sort of collaboration on the sort of guitar and bass interplay. It had to complement what Mike is doing guitar wise. Right. And anyone who's not heard Mike Venert play guitar, he's just a wizard of tone. He is so thoroughly studied in his guitar sound over the years. So yeah, he is rocking Orange and Mad Amp stereo rig on this gig.
Of course.
So the AD200 B just complemented that perfectly.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
What did you go for cab-wise?
So two OBC 410s.
That's great. They do an 810 though, don't they?
They do. Yeah, this was just how we had one already. So it just made sense to add another. And I don't know, arguably make the load in easier. It's not really easier, is it? When
it's so heavy. Orange cabs are so heavy. They weigh
Don't know if two 410s is better than one 810 for load ins and outs. But yeah, of course, tonally, it just formed a perfect wall behind me, both in rehearsals and on stage. Yeah, it's I think the mark of a good amp is sort of dialing in what you need and not having to think about it, not having to tweak it. The set for that band isn't massively varied. There's sort of like three sort of sounds that I sort of dance around, a very sort of squared off fuzz kind of tone for the very down-tuned stuff. We go as low as B flat. So
right, wow. On a four string as well.
On a four string, yeah, exactly. So it's in drop C usually. So D standard dropped to C,
right?
And then for some bits we go down to B flat, and the amp had to handle that, the pedals had to handle it, the bass had to handle it. So all of these were sort of considerations that we had to make in building the rig. The AD200 handled the clean moments without me having to change anything about what's dialed in. Running it pretty much at unity, handled them lovely, handled the pedals that sounded potentially a tiny bit more guitar geared in my headphones, and then through the amp they just completely came to life perfectly for bass. And again, that's just the mark of a brilliant amp, is one that sort of
weirdly
and effortlessly just complements and does justice to your pedals, you know.
They're such great. The Orange bass cabs that weigh a ton and they're made out of marine ply, mm-hmm. and the AD200 head, I feel like they've been in production for 20 years at least, and probably without any change. And the reason is because they're got them really right when they made them. They're fantastic sounding amplifiers. They're, you know, before I played Ashdown, I played the Orange stuff, and it was always really, really good. And kind of, I feel like if you want like a big valve head, and your choice is an Ampeg SVT, which they've spent a long time not being made that well, and they have a really specific sound. I know everyone loves the Ampeg sound, don't get me wrong, but if you don't, it makes it hard to find like a good valve alternative. And an Orange, the 8200, is absolutely the best valve alternative out there for it. They are.
It's also the only, I hope I'm correct on this, I'm fairly certain it's the only all valve bass head that they make as well.
It is, yeah. Because
I think everything else is either hybrid or solid.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they do. They've really sort of done a bunch of weird stuff recently. They did like their 2 and 4 stroke heads, which were weird for Orange because they had like loads of EQ options, which I feel like that's not what you go to Orange for. And they were solid state. And they did. They previously had their I can't remember what they call it. Their OB1 or the
OB1 500, I think, was one of the last before it. Yeah.
That's right. And that I had one of those, and that was good. That was solid state, but solid state without a valve in the preamp always has a weird sort of clinical sound to me that I wasn't 100% in on, but it was, they sounded great. And then of course there was the TerraBass stuff, which is just a valve pre with a solid state power section. I think that's right. Is that right?
Yes.
I think that's
memory
correct.
Serves it that, is. And I mean, the TerraBass is fantastic sounding. I have played an OB1 500 and really liked it as well.
Yeah.
For this gig, it was one of those rare opportunities where practicality can sort of afford to go out the window just that little bit.
That must have been really nice when it's such a governing thing.
A true
thing.
Treat, honestly, like a true treat, because if it were me, I would be, I would be going, what is this? What can go in my backpack in case I need to abandon my car and get on a train or a bus? That would be my thought process otherwise. But
let's talk about pedals and pedal board and stuff like that, because I guess did you have to have much of a pedal board if everything just had to, was there like just one default tone that you were going for, or did you have to do several different things?
Really, there was only two default tones that I sort of had to go for. One very solid driven tone that could kind of be the middle of the road for playing through the album. And then what was sort of prescribed to me was a slightly more rat tone to sort of toggle in on top of that for certain sections that need like a really, really smooth note. So like there are some sections in the Empire album that are like very, very long notes where Simon's doing awesome melodic stuff vocally and Dave is just like on like solid double bass, just like epic, absolutely epically heavy sections that just require really, really long fuzzed out smooth notes. So that was the main thing that was prescribed, just have a super, super solid driven sound and something that you can sort of knock in that is sort of a little more fuzzy, a little more boosted. And then there are one or two little clean moments that just required sort of a nice pre. So, I mean, if I was to really pare it down, I probably could have done like a three pedal board for this. I probably could have done a nice pre. I mean, I used the VT bass, which I've always been a fan of.
The Sans Amp.
Yes. Yeah.
It's very good. It's just a classic, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Nothing, absolutely nothing wrong with it. Can't really go wrong on any setting, but you can easily dial in plenty. I mean, interestingly, even I even found the Sandemas a little aggressive going into the VT bass. So that was kind of why I ended up going to the passive setting on it most of the time, on the bass, that is.
Right.
And then the go-to driven sound that turned into my always on was made up of two pedals. One was the Fairfield Circuitry Barbershop. Have you guys heard of this?
I mean, I know Fairfield Circuitry, but no, I don't know that pedal. JD?
I've heard of it, but yeah, go ahead, Naomi.
Yeah, so it is, I believe they produced this before and it is now a reissue, but as a super simple basically JFET style drive. It is absolutely stunning. Its controls are simply volume, drive, sag. And then there's a tone switch as well, which can kind of kick in a little more high. But it just worked stunningly on bass. Fairfield are an absolutely awesome company. They are Canada based, I believe. They do the Long Life, which is an amazing EQ. They do the Model B, which is an always on. I hadn't actually seen an always on before, so there's no foot switch on the always on. It's the barbershop just with no foot switch.
I love it. They have such a utilitarian look to their pedals as well. Because it's just the hammered steel and then stamped logos.
Yeah, exactly. Very very utilitarian, as you say, very sort of unified in their sort of styling, both sonically and visually. So that became my always on, the Barbershop Millennium Overdrive. I'm just seeing is its full name. I paired that with the 1981 Inventions DRV drive.
Wow.
Yeah, just
what a classic.
What an absolute joy of a pedal. This stunned me. I knew it was a very hyped pedal for guitar. I hadn't actually checked out any sort of demos on bass before picking it up and adding it to the board. And my, oh my, it was just, it's just such a stunningly glossy, like well-formed, rich drive with an active bass going into it is super powerful as well. Again, my favorite, just super simple controls, not like nothing really that can go wrong with it. This I had ever so slight questions over it when I was just sort of on headphones practicing. I did wonder, you know, this sounds absolutely beautiful. Am I losing a little bit of low end? But the minute I actually heard it in the room, plugged into the AD200, that all completely faded away. It sounded so full, so rich, and so full range. It is worth every iota of hype that's behind that pedal is worth it in my opinion. Shall I keep going? These were kind of the core always on. So the VT bass into the Fairfield Barbershop into the 1981 DRV.
Is there anything that's not a drive on your pedal board? Do you ever need, do you need modulation or anything like that, or any delays or reverbs?
No, on this gig. Right. No. So, I may as well tell you how I was running it, because my beloved Stomp was the brains running everything.
I see.
Yeah. So I had an extremely simple patch, on my Stomp, which, if anyone has listened to episodes with myself on the pod before, the Stomp has basically formed my always in the gig bag for sort of any session work I've done. But in this case, I simply was using a compressor, was running the clean through it, and then in parallel, I was running the effects loop. So I had my clean signal coming out, and then all of the drives and fuzzes as a parallel in the effects loop.
Oh, that's one of the real advantages of the Stomp, being able to do that. You know, it's one of the things I struggle with the Boss MS3 is that you can't run anything alongside it. It's just
No,
it's just a single track. I mean, it's good in that most of the effects have a clean blend on them, which is handy, but that's still not the same, because you still have to set that per pedal, per effect, and so they can almost stack almost on top of it. It's basically difficult to use. You know, it doesn't give you the same versatility. I don't know, think about that, about the Stomp. That's very handy. So what you just had, so all the drive pedals were just in the effects loop, and that's very, very smart.
Yes, I had a Boss NS2 in there as well. This is the NS2?
Yes!
The super simple noise suppressor.
Threshold and decay, I think, just those think two controls.
So
versatile.
And the reason I had that in there was the craziest, loudest sounding pedal I've ever heard in my entire life came after the DRV and the Barbershop, and that is the Does It Doom Agartha. Are you guys familiar?
No. What is this?
Or are you familiar with Does It Doom pedals?
No, I've never heard of this.
Oh, Joe, get ready.
Oh, I'm so ready.
So I didn't know a huge amount about Does It Doom before. This was completely recommended to me by Mike. But Does It Doom, yeah, as a brand, I mean, it sort of a does what it says in the tin, just a range of pedals, just beautifully built for all things doom, all things stoner, all things down-tuned.
Right.
And then the, and yeah, visually they're, yeah, just very,
I mean,
very fitting artwork and pedal fittings as well. I think sure. most, I actually think all of the current catalog with the exception of one pedal, I think other than that, all of them are single knob pedals.
Right.
I mean, how beautifully control. Simple can you get? Yeah, exactly. Just a single knob, one massive control. So the Agartha, I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly, is a drone distortion pre, is how it's described. And what it combines is the Sunno Model T amp and a rat.
Right. And
so what you get is just this drone magic where that one knob basically dials between just the sort of Sun Model T amp tone, and then you further dial in the sort of really heavy, loud, squared off sound of the rat. Without a shadow of a doubt, the most aggressive sounding pedal I've ever heard in my life. So I think after about a day of rehearsals, there was a call made, which was, we need a noise suppressor. it worked wonders. So it gets, yeah, it gets dialed in, the Agartha, in some of the heavier parts of this gig.
I see.
Just looking at this, Does It Doom? They have one which is their, what is it? I don't remember what it's called. The Doom Saw, which is just a HM2, like a dimed HM2, one knob. The knob is grief. It's so good. It's so good.
What more can you ask for? I think the company is US based. I know the site is in dollars, but everything I've heard, every single demo I've heard of Does It Doom, I just could not recommend them more. If doom and sort of stoner and, as I say, down-tuned vibes are your thing, they are, yeah, magically built pedals.
Yes, they look fantastic, but exactly the sort of thing that you need a noise suppressor for. How did you run the noise suppressor? Just after it, or did you run the Agartha in the effects loop of the noise suppressor?
I didn't run it in the effects loop of the noise suppressor. I simply ran it into the noise suppressor. Yeah, and then on the end, then I had two pedals, not one but two, by a pedal builder from Dublin called Moose Electronics. I don't know if you guys are familiar.
No. God, everything you do is so niche now, Naomi.
Get out of my space.
I've literally gone from Squire is God to to completely Squire still is God to me. You know, Broncos till I DIE. But you're not wrong there, Joe. I have sort of gone deep into niche town. However,
these look great.
Yeah, Moose as a pedal builder, I seriously would recommend that you perhaps even hit him up for an interview, because his story is just so interesting.
The Cosmic Trigger, the Battle Hammer, the Nomad, the Sledgehammer.
He does it right. He does it right for sure. So Kian is the guy's name. He has I've sort of known him from the sort of heavy music scene in Dublin for many, many years, and he's been building pedals I think since around 09 or 10 maybe.
Right.
And was sort of selling them, like building and selling sort of amongst peers for a long time, and then, you know, went into sort of fully like screen printing these and sort of producing sort of higher volumes of them, and it's awesome. You know, bands like Gillaband and Fontaines and many other big names are now using his pedals and raving about them. So at the end of the board I have the Turbo Lover Distortion, again a name that I love. Super simple distortion with really high gain for kind of chugging and like anything that's a little bit more leady. I sort of pop it on for moments. absolutely awesome sounding for bass. And then the Sledgehammer is a little more comprehensive. It's a slightly wider pedal. It's an overdrive.
You get a clean blend as well by the looks of it on the Sledgehammer.
Yes,
and a decent amount of mids. You get two. Oh, you get a mid control and one of those mid frequency controls so that you can isolate which bit of the mids you're boosting or cutting. That's kind of handy.
Exactly.
That looks great, actually. What sort of, is that distortion again, or is that more an overdrive?
So it describes itself as a drive distortion pre.
Right.
I have it dialed in sort of more as a drive than a distortion because I'm using it next to a distortion, so I kind of swap between the two. But the clean blend is fantastic on that. And yeah, like you say, having a parametric mid control has been fantastic because at times I've sort of felt the need to kind of tame what the San Dimas is doing because it's just so lively and big sounding. So the Sledgehammer has been fantastic for it. It is a really unbelievable pedal. I'm surprised I haven't brought it up on the pod until now, to be honest. It's been out a few years, but well worth checking out, I would say.
Everything on this Moose electronic website, which is moose23.com is the website. 20 and 3 are the words, not the numbers, dear listener. They all look fantastic. I'm going to watch a bunch of videos and then probably buy something after this podcast.
Yeah.
Oh, no, the Sledgehammer's out of stock. Nah.
Yeah, it would not surprise me to watch you fall in love with several of his builds. The Nomad Fuzz as well, I've tried many times, is fantastic as well. So, yeah, a lot of sort of, again, sort of Sun and Rat-based builds there. And, yeah, kind of op-amp inspired. Yeah, awesome. Awesome work by him. Thus concludes my board. Thank you for sticking with me. It was quite a few bits. It's been a while since I had such a big board. It was about sort of 5-6 years ago that I last had a sort of 7-8 pedal board. So it's been
and they're
really
all doing the same thing, Naomi. They're all different flavors of the same thing.
Because that's all that's needed.
I know. No, that's totally cool. It's just amazing to have such a big board of things that are just drives. But that is awesome. What an awesome setup. How very cool. Dear listener, after we finish this episode, worth knowing, after we finish this episode, we're going to be heading over to Patreon, patreon.com/guitar nerds, where each week we answer a question of the week, which we take questions, things that have been said from the Guitar Nerds Facebook group, Guitar Nerds group on Facebook. This week, I don't know kind of what we're going to talk about. I've written like 4 or 5 things down that people have been talking about. Peter Pesce's got himself a Grez. There are so many of us now with Grez guitars on the group. So maybe we'll talk a little about that. Brandon Ivy's talked about gear horror stories. Maybe we'll talk about that. Thomas Adelgren's taken some time off of buying gear and
disgusting.
Yeah, I know, which is weird. But, you know, other people commented on the fact that, yeah, you know, even the secondhand market's got so expensive. So I thought maybe we could talk about, yes, gear prices have soared, but there are still hidden gems out there, dear listener. Maybe we'll give Thomas some advice on what he can get back into buying. And then we've got some other Phil Radomski's looking for the best amplest rig pedal. I know that's something we've talked around before, but it's always worth going back over it because it's such an ever-changing market as the world moves more towards being ampless. So we're going to go and talk about those things afterwards. Before we do, as we're sort of on this, you know, we've been talking a whole bunch about, you know, distortion, drive pedals, pedals for bass, things like that. I'm sorry, dear listener, inevitably we are talking about a bunch of bass stuff. JD, I think you've actually finally, we're at a point where you've had a solid bunch of time with the massive amount of KMA machines purchases that you made after the Birmingham Guitar Show, because, you know, talking of that, that one knob HM2 style pedal, you got the Worm 2, right?
The Worm 2, which is their sort of like super HM2
It's an HM2 with an extra two bands of EQ, and then they have like a voicing switch on it, dear listener. So you can have something inspired by the Boss HM2 voicing. You can have the KMA voicing, which is much broader and actually works very well for bass because of that. Or you can have a stacked blend of the two. I think that's kind of the deal with it. How have you found, now you've had some time with that, how have you found that for bass?
Yeah, I really like it. I have the voicing's on a toggle switch, so I tend to keep it at the KMA voicing, but I'll say it's sort of volume gain, and then high mid, low mid, lows, which I find especially for like the HM2 is like really useful, because it's in the mids that I always get really fussy about my sounds, and will, you know, that's what really makes or breaks the distortion for me. It's definitely, so I would say like HM2 wouldn't be my sort of, if I had to pick one distortion, it's probably not the one I take with me, but let's face it, when have I ever taken just one distortion with me? So I find it's great for doing what it does, that HM2 style, just like really, well, I like it really dimed, like the classic, like chainsaw.
With that really like honky mid sort of thing.
But I also, like, I find this, but it doesn't really get to like overdrive territory. Like, it's always a really aggressive distortion, but I find that that I can get it when the gain knob is called terror on this pedal, like have it, you know, down towards, I don't know, like 8 o'clock or something like that, that it's a very usable grindy distortion that reminds me, I was trying to think of the song. Oh, it reminds me a bit of, there's a Ghost song called Pinnacle to the Pit, which is one of my favorite bass tones. Just like the very start of the song. And it's one of those that just, it's very distorted in your face, but being able to go for that, or just like outright onslaught of noise. Cause a lot of the stuff I'm doing now is back more in the noisier territories, and just creating sort of sonic walls and stuff, and trying to fill different spaces. So it really lets me hit that highs and sort of piercing sort of distortion that I really like, that I don't often have in my other settings for, you know, big woolly fuzzes and things like that.
Awesome.
Do you miss having a clean blend on it? Because you get a clean blend on the KMA Guardian of the Worm, which I love for bass. And I find the clean blend to be quite an essential part of that.
Yeah, I think I really would. It's because like everything I think if anything, that would really open up possibilities for what I could use it for. I think what I have been using this one for is intentionally like a destruction machine, you know, so it's sort of like the clean blend is neither here nor there really. And I have other ways to kind of get a clean blend if I really want to. Like, I have other pedals that have built-in effects loops I could run this in that would allow me to have a clean blend. But I think I would really like it. Like, if there's a Worm 3 coming out, you know, would it make me get a Worm 3 just for that? Probably. But
did you get the KMA blender?
No, I didn't get the blender. No, that was one I was like, this feels like a bridge too far. For now, I mean, talk to me in two more episodes and we'll see what's there. But yeah, no, that one I didn't actually get. So I just have at the moment, my KMA collection is Quikoi 1, Quikoi 2, the Moai Mea, which is the other sort of analog octave, the Worm 2, the Chief Disruptor, which is the super duper big muff, and the Cirrus, which is the sort of reverb delay modulation sort of big sound make box.
So I see. Yeah, I guess the Chief Disruptor, that's a muff with a clean blend, and the heavy setting on it is so intense, it's almost gated, so you kind of can get some really like distorty tones out of that. I find they call it a fuzz distortion, which is quite appropriate because I think it does more than a big muff would. It's not just that scooped sound.
Yeah, well, there's just so many options for it. And you know, I've spoken before, like one of my I mean, actually, at the moment, my literal favorite Big Muff sound of all time right now is the Thorpey Fallout Cloud. But the Chief right. Disruptor, which, and then that one's just a sort of a classic Big Muff sort of, you know, volume. You have volume, treble, bass, and gain, you know, so you're sort of looking at like those sort of options, which is great. No Clean Blend does, you know, does what it does. That's what I'll use likely when it's just big swells, long notes, those sorts of just like punishing bits. But the Chief Disruptors is the thing that is on my board now, for like rehearsals and stuff, because it just does so much. I'm really playing through everything, and it sounds great. It's I mean I'd recommend it to everybody because it just
right.
And because I'm such a Big Muff freak that I love all, like, I just, they're always my favorite fuzz distortions that I you know, I mean, you've seen my distortion collection. It's ridiculous. And I always end up going back to like a Big Muff or a Big Muff style something. And I think the Chief Disruptor just, there's just so many options that it does that it, you know, because it has, like you were talking about before, like there's a heavy setting, but it's, you basically have like a toggle for tight, vintage, or heavy sort of options. You get like three big flavors of Big Muff just with that switch. There's overall low and high switch. There's Clean Blend. There's a mid cut and boost, which is on a separate foot switch as well. There's an overall top boost, which I usually don't use, but I do find myself using in this new band I'm in. And then, you know, like a mid frequency, so you can actually set the midpoint for the cue there. And it's just,
you can choose to have the EQ pre or post gain stage as well.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah, and I think it's really, and like. I would say, like, sort of demoing it with like headphones or recording, it doesn't, like, that pre-post didn't really, I didn't notice the difference that much. But as soon as I was in a room where, you know, I was playing loudly, quite loudly, that it, flicking that switch, like, makes a massive amount of difference of like where the EQ was, and being able to have all those options, and the fact that each one of the, like, the tight, vintage, heavy, and the pre-post are on toggles, well, and the top boost is great if I'm switching basses or something like that. Because if I go from right. like a stone, like, because I mostly playing my Stonefield or the aluminium Kramer, that it's, you know, it's just, it really lets you be able to sort of quickly change voicings dramatically, but, you know, between songs without actually having to do much.
I'd never actually thought about that before with changing instruments mid-set, and how switching rather than pots can on a pedal can make that sort of switch up really, really instantaneous and handy. I was going to ask you as well, like, do you use the mids foot switch? Do you like to sort of set like two levels on the Chief Disruptor, or do you usually just on off it?
I do use it because there's a couple. So that's, I sort of use the mids boost as more. Like, I never really get like a scooped sound with the way I set up my Big Muff usually. Like, it's mm-hmm. just this big, huge thing. But the mids being able to like sort of tweak, like pinging the frequency a bit higher, so that if I click that on, it's if I'm playing like a faster line where I actually want definition, where a lot of times when I'm really, what I end up doing with Big Muff is trying to. It's playing Doom stuff, but much faster, you know? So I want is like this big rumbly mess of gnarliness. And if I'm doing that, like, I'll have the mids sort of low, but I sort of use the mids just as sort of an overall, a bit of a tone switch, but also more as, it just kind of like a general boost. If I want a little bit more volume, like overall, like if there are certain parts where, I'm standing out here because it's like the dramatic bit of the song or something. Mm, so
you can just use it to like step it up. That's really cool.
It's, I mean, also it looks really cool. Like it's a really cool looking pedal, but it's, yeah, I'm glad I was finally convinced to buy one, you know, cause like Joe, you said how great it was for so long. And then I was like, yeah. I mean, but I have like 20 other Big Muffs and surely I don't need yet another one. And it's like, oh yeah, it's the one that's on my board. And
it is very good.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah. It is an extremely good pedal. I have a version of the Chief Disruptor that they printed for me for Christmas that has Santa on it instead of the normal graphics.
Santa
next to a tree, and it says my name in the Chief Disruptor font as well.
Joe, that's so cool. That's so cool.
Could we get some made where Jess would do the drawings? So we could have the drawings of us. And then...
Chief Disruptors.
Well, I know that Bruce listens to this podcast, so there you go, Bruce. If you're interested, you know. I've got a call with him tomorrow at 10:30. So, oh, actually, the podcast won't be up before then. This is in the past, Bruce. I hope we had a good chat.
Yeah. This is your super subtle hint, please. Yeah. Please.
And also, just chasing on action item number 7, if you could get back to me.
So what do you guys think about the Boss ODB3? You know, we've talked a lot about distortions and a lot of the buzzwords people are using for what they want. I feel like it's the thing that the Boss ODB3 did. Why has that pedal been on either of your radars, Naomi? Was it on your radar at all to drive for any of these things?
Regrettably, no.
I feel like it gets overlooked. It's not a bad pedal.
No, you're
JD.
Right. You're right. Yeah. I'm being super honest here. You know, I have of course played it over the years, and I've watched when I've worked in stores, I've watched it be a top seller. A lot of people pick it up. You know, maybe it's so good at what it does. It's become one of my sleepers. You know,
I will say, I overlook it because I just never think about it. And it's probably different for bass for sure. But like when I think of overdrive, I never think, oh, I should check out Boss stuff. You know, like it's never sort of top of mind for me. But I feel like those, because I think what are those? Like right at $100 newish? Like they're in that ballpark, I think.
I realized I didn't have one about a year ago, and I think I bought one off of eBay for $50. I think the mistake that they've made is by calling it a bass overdrive. If they'd have called it bass high frequency distortion, then I'd have been like, oh, because that's what it does. It's a very fizzy, fuzzy distortion tone, way more than it's an overdrive. Like you can't really
get that.
You can't get that organic breakup that I feel is overdrive. It's distortion. It sounds like an effect on top of your sound, not an exciter of your sound, sort of thing. Yeah. And with that the bass and the treble EQ, there's so much in them. There's so much added low end and so much added high end if you rotate them. And you know, the clean blend really helps because it's such a. If it didn't say bass on it, I would think it was a guitar drive because it's so much high end from it. But I feel like when it comes to full, like I took it off my board because I was like, well, I rarely need this level of distortion. I need something a little bit more ampy, a little bit more subtle. But actually, for big crazy stuff, it's one of the cheapest pedals on the market that probably does a pretty good job. I certainly feel like if you want a rat style tone, then the ODB3 is a great alternative for that. But
no, you raise a really good point. I sort of feel like in its simplicity and probably in its price point, like how strange that, you know, as experienced musicians with ears who have all played this pedal that we do overlook. But you're right, you know, you do think of it as sort of bass overdrive 101 if you've not heard it in a while. Rather than the sort of powerful distortion that it is. I think maybe in more recent years I've leaned more on the sort of modulation effects by Boss than I have on sort of drives. Like I've used the bass driver. Is it the BB?
Yeah, the BD1X.
Yes.
BD1X, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, BD1X. I had a loan of that about 2 years ago, loved it. Maybe this is a good reminder for me to jump them back in. On on my next board.
I really like the BD-1X. Not having a mids control on there, I think, is a problem. Mm. For something that's supposed to be a bass preamp. I need to be able to control my mids. You can't just tell me where they're going to be. I have to, everything's going to be different.
Yeah, for sure.
So that was always the problem with that pedal. I found great for P basses, but as soon as I was using a jazz or anything that had a natural scoop to it, your mids just disappears completely.
Yeah, the scoop gets accentuated. Isn't the ODB3 the same as well? Is there a mids?
It doesn't have a mids control, but that matters a bit less on like a crazy drive like that.
True.
You know, it's kind of almost
when
what
it's
you
high
want
and fizzy
that,
already, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But yes, it was cool. But there you go.
I think that's just a really good shout to like always. You know, sort of like what I was saying before with the whole, you know, I'll buy a lot of fancy things and then always come back to like a big muff. Like, I think it's a really good, really good thing to come back and be like, oh, what about just the Boss ODB3? And I was like, yeah, right. I could easily go check one out and it will probably be as good or better than most of the things I already have.
Like, yeah, I have exactly that with the Rat. The Rat is like the horrible honky super nasal sound that I always find myself coming back to.
It's a great sounding drive. It just needs to be, for bass, it needs to be run with a clean blend of some form. But
exactly.
For guitar, the Proco Rat is just a perfect distorted sound that's kind of untoppable. It's very good. We are, dear listener, coming quite close to the end of this podcast. And Rob, we haven't done your topic of the week at all.
Oh, no.
And it's such a good topic. I'm so sorry. I'm going to have to bench it. So, dear listener, I'm not going to do a spin the wheel this week because I've got to give it to Rob next week. And we will actually talk about the topics in detail then. I promise. I know I'm getting bad at this, dear listener, but I promise we will talk about these things. Before we go this week, and I'm going to talk about this in more depth on next week's podcast as well. But dear listener, and JD and Naomi, I have started collecting the Gaiatone Micro Pedal series.
So
this
good.
Pedal series, amazing. Dear listener. They are amazing. They have like a weird rubber base to them. They look like nothing you've ever seen, but they're 80s pedals that were top-mounted jacks. They're so ahead of their time. Soft switch, foot switch, very... So I've got the FL3, and again, I'm gonna do a whole thing on this next week. I was looking for new pedals. I wanted to get Juan Alderete's sound from like the later Mars Volta years. I watched some of the rig rundowns that he was doing for some of the bands post Mars Volta, and he had a bunch of these Gaiatone pedals. And I've recently become obsessed with flanger, and I was like, I wonder if this series did a flanger, and they did the FL3. I listened to demos of it. It sounds absolutely amazing. So I got one for a very reasonable price. And just, you know, as we go at the end of the podcast, I recorded a track with this. So this is a two control, just two controls on this flanger. You've just got rate and depth and like a little switch with three presets. It doesn't do a lot. It basically removes bass the lower you go. So I've left it on one. Every single instrument on this track, excluding drums, has had the FL3 applied to it. And here's the thing about flanger. It gets overlooked for being the cheesiest modulation effect. What it is the best modulation effect, because you can get chorus tones from it, but you can get vibrato tones from it, and you can get crazy flanger tones from it. So it's all I've used for everything, but every instrument I've used it in a completely different way, and it is so wonderful and versatile and brilliant. Here's a little track that we made with it, and I'll play that now.
those tails at the end.
Yeah. Sound great.
Well, that's what I mean. It was everything. It was doing crazy, almost tremolo. It was doing like slow vibrato. It does soft chorus sounds.
It's such a vibey pedal. I mean, it's such a vibey effect overall. I'm a closeted flange freak, I would say. It rarely seems to make it to any kind of recordings or performances I've done, but I love the sound of it. And the FL3, I did have a listen to a few demos earlier, Joe, before coming on the pod, and it's so powerfully sweet. It's a really particularly sweet flange.
Because it doesn't overpower. It's actually kind of subtle. Like, you could of course push it and do those crazy things, but it's only two controls. There's not loads of voicing options on there, you know. And I find when you think about flanger, you think about, I don't know, like, Are You Gonna Go My Way by Lenny Kravitz and stuff like that. Like, times where flange has been used incredibly, so heavily that it almost overpowers the notes being played, or Barracuda or something like that. That's what you think of when you think of flanger.
Oh, for sure. Or like, and the Edge has used flanger to within an inch of its life at times.
Exactly. And it's so much. I understand why people go, oh, flanger's tacky. I'd rather have a chorus. I'd rather have a vibrato or a phaser. But actually, carefully used, and if you find the right one, and I find that the Boss BF3, I think their current one, is maybe a little trickier to get subtle tones out of. It's quite a full-on flanger pedal. The Skytone, perfect. I could have this on my board with no other modulation and kind of get everything out of it. I think it's going to replace my Dimension Chorus. My DC 2W2?
Yeah.
I think it's going to replace that on the board because I feel like it can do a similar thing.
Awesome. I really like the Dimension Chorus as well. I liked it. But this seems more responsive in its it's a three-way switch, isn't it? The resonance
that you're using to
kind of get the almost entirely different effects out of. Very cool, very handy little pedal. I love how small it is as well for the board.
Yes, exactly. It's actually deceptively large because it has this it has a rubber base which increases the size of the pedal quite substantially. I've seen lots of people
footprint is bigger.
Yeah, you could take the rubber base off. I just pulled it back and saw the amount of grime that is underneath this one, and I'm going to put that right back. But no, I'm going to keep the rubber base on because I'm, dear listener, I'm hunting for every single one of these. Unfortunately, Juan Alderete has ruined the base auto wah because he's said that it's better than his Moog auto wah at one point. And I noticed that they go for about £350 now, whereas the rest of the range go for about £100, £150. So
words from the main man.
Exactly. Anyway, dear listener, we have come to the end of this week's episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast. The three of us are going to head over to Patreon. We're going to talk about some questions from the Guitar Nerds group. But thank you as ever, dear listener, for sticking with us. If you want to get hold of us for any reason, you can DM us on any of the social medias or email us on info@guitarnerds.net. If you've got any leads on any Gaia Tone micro pedals, I am all ears. I would be very appreciative of that. If you want to join us on Patreon, you can patreon.com/guitarnerds. If you go over there, there's all the info on how you can sign up and support our charming community. You can do that for as little as $1 a month. We'll be back next week with more of this guitar nerdery. Thank you for listening. You've been lovely. Farewell.
Bye-bye.
Cheerio.
Thank you, dear Patreon supporters, for listening to another episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast. Now, of course, as usual, it is time for me to thank our top tier Patreon supporters for being so amazing. Thank you to Marcus Deluxe, Suresh, Dorsonic Pickups, Chris Franklin, Anton Fryant, Russ Meehan, Barry Gresbick, Steve Davis, Daniel Walker, Joyn Brown, John Conaway, The Studio Rats, Russell Healing, Yogi the Guitarist, Ty Allen, Kyle Harris, Sean Hughes, Andy Hoffler, Eric Hemmer, Jeffrey Wax, Brian Einsler, Mark Hizau Kadawaki, Stuart Robinson,
Robson, Eric File, Peter Pesce, Andy Manley, Simon Milbourne, Joe Puttick, Blake Weiland, Phil Radomski, Dave Lee, Ross Edwards, Jason Wharton, James Dorr, Jake Gray, Derek Rich, Scott Kennedy, Steve Merkel, Abe Matthews, Christopher Losef, Stephen Burke, Robin Smith, Kytopia the Band, JD Short, Andy McKenzie, Brad Page, Paul Corrigan, Rob Nordvik, Scott O'Brien, and of course, Moog Gravit.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.